8:03, final hour of The Drive. Make sure you're ready for the International Sportsman's Expo. That's tomorrow through Sunday. Cal Expo, be there, be there, be there. We'll talk about Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger and their comments on Antonio Brown and him live streaming his little speech the other night. There's some more fallout from that. But first, a little Bon Jovi giveaway right now. It's Ryan. Ryan, you think you know the answer?
It's You Give Love a Bad Name.
You Give Love a Bad Name. Is that right? That's a clip. Let's hear it. Come up to the hook. Because it's the, you know, who is this, Tico Torres? Richie Sambora?
It is
here we
not.
Go. Oh, let it go. Yes. Congratulations, Ryan. You got yourself tickets to Bon Jovi February 28th, Golden One Center. You qualify for the grand prize, you and five of your buddies. Ryan, do you have five buddies that go to Top Golf? You have five buddies, right?
I could probably find some.
Scare some up. That's this Sunday. Watch a little championship golf with us. Appreciate it. Hey, what local sports station makes all your Bon Jovi and golf dreams come true?
1140.
Hey, look at that. See, that's some old-timey stuff right there. Thank you. I almost gave him the Price is Right horns. Hit the wrong button. Antonio Brown got the Price is Right horns for what he did. He'd been a bad boy. He has been a bad boy.
He got taken out to the woodshed.
Yes,
and
he did.
Smacked around by Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin had a few things to say. We got a number of quotes from Mike Tomlin. We'll guide you through them right now. First off, hey, Mike, was it a bad thing? So Coach Tomlin not exactly getting the point, but I think you can read between the lines there.
His remarks completely shocked me.
Me too.
I do not know this guy as well as, you know, we know Jack Del Rio and Chip Kelly, like teams that we cover more intensely here in Sacramento. I did not know what to expect when he spoke to the media yesterday. He shocked me in the best way possible. Good for you, Mike Tomlin.
And he went on to talk about not only is it a team violation, it's a league violation. I like what he said there, too, because that's going to take care of the whole, well, if he was a backup offensive lineman, he'd be suspended. Mm-hmm. He kind of put it very succinctly. We're going to punish him. We're not going to punish us. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a great point. I would expect.
Is that a direct shot at Ron Rivera?
I mean, it might be. Where he says, we're gonna fine you a good amount of money. You're going to pay for what you did.
By the team, and then the league is going to probably pass down another one.
But what we're not going to do is we're not going to punish us by having you miss a quarter or a game. We're not going to punish everybody else because you're a huge part of this team, and we don't want to lose because you're an idiot. But, you know, he does obviously care about Antonio Brown. Now, I think where he got the deepest is when he started alluding to players that have a ton of talent that for some reason bounce from team to team to team, and it's not always contract issues.
He sent a message to this young man.
100%. And he wasn't the only one. Ben Roethlisberger got involved as well.
I mean, we don't want people seeing the dudes hugging and having emotions.
No, that's private.
No, it's but it, the like, emotions, I mean, largely, and what they result in. Like you,
no,
you have to
right
talk
side,
yourself. They just won a game, sending them to the conference championship. They should start preparing for that game at that moment. And that starts with a little bit of trash talking. It starts with saying, hey, we got to go in there. They have an extra day on us. They screwed us by changing the time of this game. Like, all of these things need to be said. It starts the pumping you up to the next week thing. And I feel bad for Mike Tomlin that he feels that he needs to apologize for anything he said during that talk in the locker room, because none of it was bad. All of it should have been said.
I give him credit for apologizing just because I don't think he did that out of some sort of like perception or PR thing. I think he legitimately felt bad that something that he didn't want to get out there, regardless of the content of it, was out there.
But we're all on the same page there that he has nothing to apologize for. The fact that he did, it's content of his character.
Yeah.
But he has nothing to apologize for.
But at the same time, I understand, like, you don't want your kid hearing that.
No.
You don't, you know, there's certain things that we don't talk in front of our kids the same way that we talk in front of our friends, and there's a reason behind that.
He might not want his kids hearing it. I would, because I'd be like, that's why we love football, son.
Can I present something that, you know, I have a thought in my head that's so seemingly simple that it has to be more complicated than this.
Nice.
I mean, it has to be more complicated. But if I'm the coach of an NFL team, or I'm a GM, or I'm an owner, why not, and in all sports, why not simply have lockers, little cubbies like we have out there, our little mailboxes outside the locker room? And it's very simple. Your phone goes in there. And when you leave the locker room, you can get your phone. And if you have a sick wife or kids or whatever, you can go check your phone. But you're going to check your phone in outside of the locker room. In the locker room, there are no phones. And it's that simple.
Got to pull a Jeter. Phones.
That's exactly the deal. You pull a Jeter. And I would even go a step further, although this wouldn't work because of media, but they now have technology. They've tested out in movie theaters that actually block phone usage. Phones will not ring.
I think they use that technology a lot of times, and like more than we know it.
What, in
at like sporting events and
maybe.
Stuff.
I just wonder why it's not as simple as here's how we avoid it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I mean, you could say something like too along those lines. I mean, if you're having a family emergency, there's not a direct line to the locker room. There's not a direct line right to those guys. Does it have to be the cell phone? And you'd say, well, hey, do you really want to add that middleman in there? Dude, we did it for, like, centuries before cell phones.
I understand where you guys are coming
we'll
from
okay
with
for
this.
A couple hours.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, and it's a valid point. I think it's pretty disgusting, though, that you have to put a rule in place that you would put in place at, like, a kindergarten class for grown men that should absolutely know better than to be doing this kind of stuff. It's one thing to have your cell phone and be able to communicate with your family or whatever.
Don't.
And
like,
sometimes
people should not be crooks and murderers either, but we have to put rules in place because people can't handle
you're
themselves.
You're acting like this is on the same level.
Well,
it's not.
But it's the idea behind
this,
there are laws
this
for a reason.
Goes to the point that these are grown men and they should absolutely know better
it
than
should.
To do some of these things. So it's pretty disgusting when one idiot ruins it for 50 plus other guys.
I mean, they're kind of grown men. We're talking about professional athletes here, let's be honest. And I don't want to sweep with a broad brush.
But that's one guy that adds to the perception
right.
that they're a bunch of adolescent
but
morons.
Let me go deeper into this. We're talking about a group of people that were the big men on campus in high school.
You learn your life lesson from a locker room.
They were the big men on campus in college. They have been surrounded by sycophants and media their entire lives, telling them that they are amazing at everything they do. They make millions of dollars to play a sport. It's not their fault. But for me to say that professional athletes have a stigma and properly place of sometimes being out of touch with reality and a little bit immature because of what they've seen since they were 13, 14, 15 years old, I don't think it's completely out of touch.
I wonder what the motivation behind this is, because when you talk about social media with athletes, they actually can add to their income quite a bit with endorsements and so on and so forth based on social media stuff. Antonio Brown absolutely knows the NFL policy against this. I'm wondering if this was something that he decided to do because he knew that he would benefit from it down the road and is willing to take the fine and the flack that comes with it.
If
it was something to that degree where it's like, you know what? I know it's against the rules, but guess what I'm going to get from this?
Well, I mean,
do you think there's
like anyone that screws up on social media? Like, I think he probably was aware of the consequences and didn't care because there's that moment where you're just like, dude, I'm going to get likes or I'm going to get retweets or whatever the hell it might be. Like, it just, that split second, it overrides it. Like, everyone's sent out a stupid tweet or a stupid Facebook post.
If there's any, like, incentive, like in your shoe endorsement, and it's like, okay, if you have so many retweets or so many likes, like they can measure your social media interaction. If your interaction meets this level, then we give you a $2 million bonus. That's what I'm wondering here. If there's anything, because this is the day and age where that is absolutely something that is beneficial to different companies.
I Jim Rome on this station used an analogy yesterday that he's used before, and it's a little bit of a sloppy analogy, especially because this subject is so sensitive in America right now, but I think there's something to it. He said social media, you have to treat it almost like a loaded gun. If you have a gun lying around that is loaded, if you do the wrong thing, if you do something stupid, that gun is going to go off and it's going to harm people. And I think that's accurate. I think that too many people, and Nate, great point about likes. It's they've actually done studies that show the chemicals that fill mm-hmm. your system when you get a like or a retweet or whatever. It's
really?
it's an actual.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dopamine reaction. It's like anything else. It's you get praise and it's good for you.
So I think everybody would do a lot better, and I'm guilty of this. Anybody who's spent any time on social media is guilty of this. But when you write the tweet, when you write the Facebook or Instagram post or Snap Face or whatever the hell you're doing, when you decide to go live and you are live, before you hit that blue button, before you hit that tweet or that send, read, reread, and reread again, unless it's like you're posting a stat or something, and think it through. And I think in this case, I hope, Antonio Brown just thought, here's the thing, guys. This is actually turned out about as well as it could turn out for what Antonio Brown did. He is so unbelievably lucky, because the way this really likely could have turned out is he didn't just catch Mike Tomlin making an R-rated speech about football. He could have caught some guy walking through naked. He could have caught, which isn't a big deal, I get that. He could have caught somebody saying a racial slur or telling an insensitive joke or saying something really, really stupid. The stuff that goes on in locker rooms that we have no idea.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's out there and it's caught forever. And people have the screenshots or the video. And now all of a sudden, what if one of his teammates had said something that was insanely politically incorrect? And I don't even want to speculate as to what that could be, but stuff that, quote-unquote, you
Richie
hear.
Richie Incognito.
Right. Now, all of a sudden, he has indirectly ruined this person's career or contributed to giving him a lot of headaches because he violated that privacy. And Ben Roethlisberger takes it a step further and says, okay, well, beyond all that, hey, you might want to pay attention. Maybe you should have paid attention. Maybe Antonio Brown should be paying attention to what the coach is saying and focusing on what they're talking about being a part of the meeting, and Ben spoke too, rather than worrying about Facebook Live.
Well, there was an interesting article in the Washington Post about kind of how reality TV is infiltrating the NFL. And there's multiple guys, even recently, there's more news coming out or talk. I don't know if there's anything new coming out about the feud between Aaron Rodgers and his family. Obviously, that stemmed from something that came out when his brother was on The Bachelorette or Bachelor, whatever one it was. And then Antonio Brown was on Dancing with the Stars. Travis Kelce had the reality show Chasing Kelce. And, like, these are the guys right now that so the question, you have to give credence to the question that, okay, how much of this is about personal brand for Antonio Brown?
So you're sticking with this.
It's a 17-minute video.
You think this is something that he did purposely to build his brand?
And I don't think he for one second thought about
what would
happen. Well,
of course he did.
That's
what social media is, directly or indirectly.
But how much of this is related to the fact that now with all of the outward stuff, with reality TV and all these different things that these athletes are now kind of going into, how much of it is more about them increasing their brand and adding value to their brand?
100%.
And why are they not thinking about the fact that you're going to the conference championship? Why is that the thing that you're thinking about in that locker room? Posting a stupid Facebook Live video instead of celebrating with your team and already starting to get into the mental frame of mind that you're about to go and face the freaking Patriots.
Hey,
get your head together.
What if we lived in a world where he could do both?
Facebook Live and focus.
Yeah, what if Antonio Brown is still 100% focused on beating the Patriots this weekend? What if?
Well, what do you think that says to the teammates as well? You want everybody Facebook Living now in the locker
room? No, not necessarily. Like, you still got to do something about this. But how much of it is brand management? 100%. And that goes for Joe Schmo posting on Twitter from North Dakota.
Should you be worried about brand management, though, in the locker room after a game? I mean, that's a thing.
No, but everybody is.
And they are. Exactly. And
why do you think Mike Tomlin apologized? He's worried about his brand management. Something got on camera that wasn't supposed to be on camera. And was what he said wrong? No, we all agree that he did nothing wrong, right? But he apologized because he's trying to manage his profile. It's image management.
You might be right, but that's kind of a craven way to look at it. Is he worried about his brand management, or is he sincerely sorry that kids saw this? Now, as a direct effect, his brand management, but what's his core motivation? Is he thinking about, wow, I might lose money or endorsements? Or is he thinking, wow, this is what I should,
I actually
people
took it
want
as,
to see me swear.
As fairly genuine that it was coming from a place of where
was
he was upset
too,
that his kids probably saw it and people of the community.
Yeah, but
he's been there forever.
But what does he care if, like, what people think that. Like, if he doesn't want his kids to see it, apologize to his kids.
Or other people's kids.
I'm not saying it wasn't genuine. It's just that, come on, make no mistake. Like, that's image management, too. That's all this whole thing is.
I think image is necessary. I think image is. I mean, I'm fine with an athlete or a coach or an owner or whomever recognizing that whether they like it or not, whether they asked for it or not, they're a role model. And then being a role model comes with the fact that, hey, guess what? This is why we know how much you make. We know how much you make, which is not something we could deal with in real life. People aren't going around knowing what kind of contract Katie signed with the Kings or what kind of contract you signed with KHDK or me or whoever. Mm-hmm. We don't have that information shared publicly, but I guarantee you, if we were Howard Stern, if we were Rush Limbaugh, if we were the best of the best in this business, we know how much they make, or we have a good idea. It's published, and I think that's scary for a lot of people. Like Jim in Fair Oaks right now, listening, going to his job at the HVAC place. Nobody's gonna be like, "Hey, Jim decided to stay with this company for 4 years, $160,000." No one. That doesn't happen. Jim doesn't have to come out of his plumbing job at the end and be like, "Jim, notice that you didn't really plug that toilet correctly. Your thoughts on what the Johnsons did with the backed up sewer." He doesn't have to deal with that.
I can only work with what I'm given, man.
Exactly. Like, these guys have to deal with stuff beyond what normal Joes have to deal with, and this is one of those. There's an expectation of privacy. There's an expectation of a safe space.
Forget expectations. There's an actual NFL policy in place for a reason.
There sure is. And they did not follow that. Hey, Michael Irvin was one of those diva wide receivers we talked about. Here's his thoughts.
Be ready with your ears to receive what it says.
Love it.
Oh, let's go to Dallas. They're dealing with the fallout from their loss, and Jerry Jones is on his radio show that Katie loves so much talking about Tony Romo and whether or not they've made a decision.
He sounds to me like what, in my mind, the original Colonel Sanders sounds like, right? So when I hear him, I get that image of the white hair with the mustache and maybe like the little pipe that he's smoking on. I understand he's the face of this franchise, unfortunately, owner, GM, like all that stuff. I can't get over the fact that he has a radio show and these poor people in Dallas are subjected to him every freaking week because he's not saying anything new about Tony Romo at all. There's nothing new about it. He's saying, "Hey, if you haven't heard it from my mouth, then it ain't true."
Jerry Jones, like, I'll tell you why I really hate Jerry Jones. It's because of him, I have this totally, like, irrational and unnecessary distrust of people with Southern accents.
Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not justified, but every time I hear someone talk like that, I feel like they're trying to pull something over, like they're a carnival barker or something like that, because of years and years and years of Jerry Jones giving Texans and Southerners a bad name.
I kind of feel the opposite. I actually feel the opposite. If I hear somebody with a Southern accent, like I want to go to dinner with them and I want to talk about like the old times.
Times, I'll bet you do.
I want to feel
those old Southern times.
I feel super comfortable. Come on now. I'm talking about food. you're such a cynic. Here's Jerry Jones talking. He really loves Tony Romo. Yeah, I have to wonder, though, a little bit, what does Dak Prescott think about this next quote coming up?
Do you think Jerry Jones makes him the next head coach and Jason Garrett gets
that'd be
fired?
Hilarious. Hey, be the highest paid head coach in sports history. See if you're Dak Prescott, if you take a little bit of offense to this next quote.
Okay, he is smoking something, but it's not, right? It's not a pipe.
Maybe I'm bending the wrong way, but don't you take that a little bit as like, well, we had Dak out there and he's cute and he did a great job, but Tony Romo can do things Aaron Rodgers did. Maybe if Tony Romo was out there, we win that ball game.
Just a little pat on the head.
Right? And why are you doing that? Why are you messing with the kid?
Because someone gave him a microphone.
Yeah.
From the 916, if Donald Trump doesn't have to apologize for his locker room talk, why should Mike Tomlin have to apologize? There you go. I think you got Katie. You got.
It's true. I'll bet we see Mike Tomlin's tax returns first.
You got Katie. That was 2-1. Nate was going to have a comment too. I was betting more on Nate having a snarky comment than you busting the cackle. We'll take a break. When we get back, why are the 49ers hiring a coach before a GM? We'll update you on that. We'll look ahead tonight. Kings, final game of their home sit. It's not a stand.
Their home sit.
It's not a stand on the drive. Back in 3 minutes, Sports 1140 KHTK. It's the drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. In about 7 minutes, you'll get a chance to text in to win. So listen for that at the end of this break. You could get monster truck tickets. Kings in action tonight against the Indiana Pacers. 7:30 is your tip. 7 o'clock pregame. Hear it all right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Speaking of Kings, George Karl was on with D'Lo, Damian Barling, Jason Ross, Ken Rudolph on the lowdown. You can hear him again noon to 3 today. And Damian, well, he asked George Karl of what seemed to be a fairly uncomfortable question. $20 million.
Yeah.
That's what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
$20 million. Congratulations, George Karl. By the way,
why'd you come here? They paid me?
That would have been so great. Like, my respect level would have gone up for him 30%, 40%.
I mean, just to be blunt like that, because, like, that's what he said.
Because I was sitting on the sidelines, honestly, and I wasn't getting any other real offers, and they offered me $20 million. And I figured, F it. Let's do this.
Because that's what I heard with his words.
Sam Amick at 12:30, and they'll talk about Chris Paul's injury, amongst other things. Will Graves, AP writer for the Steelers, will help the boys tackle Antonio Brown and the game this week, and that's all coming up on the lowdown, noon to 3. Kings in action again, as we said, against the Pacers. Guys, 1-5 on the homestand. This could be a 1-6 homestand. Obviously, it will be if they lose tonight, and they go out for 8 on the road.
8 on the road in 13 days with 3 sets of back-to-backs. This is a very brutal trip. It's the longest of the season coming up for the Kings. And this is one of the things, after being on the road, I think it was 13 of 18 games coming into this homestand were on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this kind of like 2 weeks at home, is like, okay, it's some time to build a little bit of momentum, synergy, you know, have your home crowd behind you. But no one realistically looking at that schedule of opponents thought this is going to be an easy homestand.
No.
It's nice because you're at home. And the reality of the situation is they were in every single game.
Yeah,
every single game was competitive, despite the fact that they trailed by double digits in all of those. The only game that they didn't trail by double digits by halftime was the Warriors,
and they were
up 16 on the Warriors in the first half, and they ended up, I think it was trailing by as much as 17 in the second half. That's a major swing. So it's not that this team doesn't have the ability to compete and win games. They just don't have the ability and haven't shown it yet to put together complete games.
How many years
they get
do
in
we
their
have
way
to
more
say
than,
that?
Yeah,
though.
Well, I understand, but you're talking about the homestand. That's been the biggest thing. They've struggled all year in the first half. It has been painfully obvious that they've made no strides on it during this homestand.
Now they have an 8-game road trip coming up. And we have to get past tonight, obviously, but let's just say for the heck of it. And by the way, they are a game out of the 8 spot, but surprisingly, I don't know if people have looked at the standings lately, they're a game behind Denver. Denver has won 3 in a row, and they have slid up. They're the Kings. Forget the playoffs.
One of those games being a complete beatdown of the Pacers.
Yes,
in
it
London.
Was in London. And now the Pacers, they played the night before last, I believe it was.
New Orleans.
So they've got to still be a little discombobulated. That game, I believe, was in Indiana. And now they're flying out here to start their own road trip.
They've won 4 or 5, though.
Yes, they have.
Yes, they have.
Yes, they have, with the exception of that blowout by Denver, who's now – forget the playoffs. So the Kings are 8 games below 500. If they lose to Indiana tonight, that gives them a 1-6 homestand. And here's the thing. And you can never tell with this team, of course. But I'm looking ahead to this road trip, and I got to be honest with you. If you gave me 3-5 right now, I would take it and say thank you very much. This is very, very easily a 1-7, 2-6 road trip. Very easily.
I mean, like, Katie went into so much nuance there as to, like, why they've failed on this homestand. Yeah. And all of it's accurate because we've watched it with our own eyes. I think the most damning thing about this team is the fact that, like, they repeatedly give us hope and then tank a homestand. Like, I mean, how often have we seen that where, okay, like, listen, you're staying above water, you're kind of floundering a little bit, but you're right there, okay? Your head's still above water, and you've got a 6-game homestand coming up. You got an 8-game homestand coming up, whatever it might be. Boom, 1-6. And, that's what tells me how bad this team, like, how the most damning thing is the fact that when they lose momentum, it happens at home. How does that happen?
I think, and they're not the only team. There's a handful of teams in the NBA this year that are much better on the road. And part of that can be attributed to the fact that when you're on the road, really all you're focusing on is the game. You're with the team all the time. You're able to kind of hang out, and they do a lot of stuff together on the road. It's kind of like a team-building experience. So when you come home, you're around your friends, your family, you're away from the, you know what I mean? Like, there is some logic behind that. But the fact of the matter is, you take all that out, it doesn't matter. The reality is you look at the problems that this team has had, and it doesn't seem that any of them are making strides in the right direction. In fact, it almost feels like it's snowballing, and those problems where we saw earlier in the season, slow starts, so on and so forth, instead of being something that you're seeing like, you know, every other game, it's been every single game.
So correct me if I'm wrong here. The Philadelphia game they played at home that they squeaked by 102-100, which makes this upcoming road game in Philadelphia even scarier because Philly's playing damned good right now. That was the first game Rudy came back, correct, after being out for a few games?
No, it was the only game that he was back during that 10-11 game period
of
time.
Of 11
I think
or whatever,
he missed
right?
like four or five, maybe even six games. He came back for that game.
He came back
and
for Philly.
He got kicked and kind of re-injured it and had said, hey, you know, I kind of rushed it back. I shouldn't have come back then either.
So Rudy played in the Philadelphia game in which they won. Now, prior to Rudy coming back, they were in the midst. That Philly game was a four-game win streak, and the Kings won 6 of 8.
Yeah.
Since that Philadelphia game that they won 102-100 on the 26th of December, the Sacramento Kings are 2-7. Going into tonight, 2-7, 2-8. Is it too simplistic to say that Rudy Gay is not good for this team and they are better without him?
You know how I feel, man.
And Katie, and I know what you're thinking, but let me throw these two things at you, and then you got a minute
to
correct. Well, let me see. I apologize. Maybe I don't. I will give you two statements here. The Sacramento Kings, since Rudy Gay came back, are 2-4-6. Okay, yes. The Kings, since he came back, are 2-7. They had won a 6 of 8 before he came back. Mm-hmm. And every single team that Rudy Gay has played for has gotten better when he's left. Therefore, equals the Sacramento Kings are better without Rudy Gay. Am I incorrect?
So what are you? Well, hold on. That's what you're thinking. Is that what you think I'm thinking?
No, I think you're thinking that it's a little bit deeper than that, and that Rudy Gay's contributions to this team go way beyond numbers, and there's several other reasons, including schedule and other guys on the team, that are factors in them losing other than Rudy Gay.
Well, I think that this is the easy affiliation to make, obviously, when you see a player that is an important part and they're out and the team does well. It's like, oh, it must be their fault. People have wanted to be on the get rid of Rudy Gay bandwagon for a while just because of the stuff in the offseason. This is the problem with Rudy. I don't want to take anything away from him as a player because he is a skilled player. However, the main problem with him is he is a ball stopper.
Yep.
And they were playing much better without him in the sense that they were moving the ball. They were playing more as a team. I saw the trust develop and grow during that time, and it has taken a step back. It's still really painful for me to say, hey, all of this is Rudy's fault, because it's not all his fault.
I know. But the question was, are the Sacramento Kings a better team without Rudy Gay, yes or no? We'll get your answer when we come back. We got to go to break. Back in 3 minutes with Katie's answer on that. We'll finish up previewing tonight's show on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. 8:47, final segment of The Drive. Get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo, Cal Expo, tomorrow through Sunday, the 19th through the 22nd. And also, get yourself ready. Start stretching now for the Big Game Golf Tournament. That's February 5th, Super Bowl Sunday, 8:30 a.m., Hagen Oaks on Fulton Avenue. You know where it is. Entry includes a big game cap, food, beverages, prizes, and more. $79.99 is all it costs to get a full day of fun, excitement, watching the big game, and, oh, yeah, playing some golf out at Hagen. For more info, khtk.com. We'll be out there playing golf with you, as will a few assorted local celebrities, ex-players, and more. Katie, before we went to break, I asked you a semi-unfair question. I admit that.
Oh, you think so?
I mean, I know that – I know for me – I know what I know what I think.
You feel bad putting me on the spot?
No. I'm saying it's unfair because it's an opinion question, not a fact. What, just because I think the Kings play better as a team without Rudy Gay on the floor?
I can give you my opinion.
What is your opinion?
My opinion is that as good as a player as Rudy is, and obviously he can score and his numbers show it and yada, yada, you can go on and on, I don't feel he fits into this system very well. It's very difficult to have somebody that you're playing alongside of, like DeMarcus Cousins, that demands touches and has the ball in his hands a lot too, not even just as a scorer, but as someone that makes plays for others. And then you add in someone like Rudy Gay, who needs the ball in his hands and isn't kind of like a flow player. He's a player that has to create his own flow, and he stops the ball. He dribbles it and dribbles himself into a flow and finds his own offense. He's not someone that, like a shooter in this league, like that's going to come off screens and spot up shoot. No, he has to create his own offense. So in this system with the Kings alongside DeMarcus Cousins, I don't think he's a good fit for this team.
Nate, have you ever played this game? And people listening, I don't know if you have or I'm the only one, but for example, tonight's game, watch when Rudy gets the ball and keep score of yourself and your predictions. When he gets the ball, and say, will he shoot the ball this time or will he pass the ball this time? And I swear to God, 90% of the time when I watch Rudy Gay and certain mannerisms, I know within a half a second whether or not he's going to shoot the ball, and I'm right 9 out of 10 times. And you could say that about a lot of players, but I feel like sometimes Rudy Gay gets the ball and he goes, I am shooting the ball, and I think defenses know the same thing.
I agree with that. Like, he's kind of transparent. What I would say is, like, if you had a budget to build an NBA player, let's call it $50, okay? And you have to, like, it's like a fantasy auction. Like, you have to choose, you know, X amount of money on three-point shooting, handling, defense, whatever. If you get $50 to do that, like, if $65 would buy you Tracy McGrady, $40 gets you Rudy Gay and $10 in your pocket. Is that a little too convoluted? Like, I feel like that's what you've got this guy that is just...
You're saying that he's like diet Tracy McGrady?
If that, like, yeah. Cut-rate Halloween store Tracy McGrady. Like, Tracy McGrady could get assists and get his teammates involved. But what my real point is here is that he's a perfect example of the way that this roster is built as a relic of an NBA that's passed. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. Rudy Gay would have been a phenomenal number one player in 2001 on 27 NBA teams. That's not what the league is anymore. You got to move the ball. You got to find a way to get yourself involved in the game without taking more than one dribble on any given possession.
What's crazy about it is very much we saw some changes. There's part of it that's like, okay, he's a player that's been in this league for a long time, and there's no changing. You know, you're not going to change the colors on this horse, but. Under Mike Malone, there was a change in him.
There was.
Very much like there was a change in DeMarcus Cousins in terms of how he behaved on the floor.
There was.
And it was obvious because it was one of those situations where Mike Malone was like, hey, if you're not going to play the offense that I want, you're going to hold the ball and you're not going to move it and you're going to ball stop, you're not going to be on the floor. But it took a year to get it to that point. It was that second year where you saw the change in DeMarcus, you saw the change in Rudy, and it's early right now. But the thing is, do you want to hitch your wagon to this horse long term? No.
Well, he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And that's the frustrating thing about Rudy Gay. I spent the last 20 minutes, you know, seemingly ripping the guy. I really, 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 really,
really like him.
Rudy Gay.
Yeah.
And not just as a person, though I think he's a quality dude. I like him as a player. My frustration with Rudy Gay is that in 90% of the NBA, when you're talking about players, it's that, well, you know what, he's got a good attitude, but man, the talent's not there. He can't shoot. He can't do this. He can't do that. With Rudy, if you could somehow give Rudy like a little minor lobotomy and change his style of thinking on the floor, but still keep his talent... I think Rudy Gay's a phenomenal fit for this team, and I think he's a hell of a number two.
You also have to factor into this how much of Rudy playing the way that he is and kind of falling onto those things of more of the, I got to get mine, has to do with the fact that he knows he's not going to be here and he needs to play himself into
I think
a contract.
That's part of it, but I also think, again, with the exception of that brief time with Michael Malone, to your point, I think this is the same Rudy we've seen his whole career here. I think it's the same Rudy we saw in Toronto. It's the same Rudy we saw in Memphis. Mm-hmm. It's the same Rudy we saw at UConn. That's just
the same Rudy whose teams always improve once
he
gets traded.
And he's a damn good player. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts,
he's talented. He's got a very diverse skill set.
And to use Katie's buzzword that she loves so much, he's a good locker room guy on top of being a good player. Like, I don't ever hear people say they don't want to play with Rudy Gay. They have problems with Rudy Gay or that Rudy Gay got into it with this guy in the locker room. He's a quality dude. He just got that one-track mind sometimes. And all the Kings, we're talking about the Sacramento Kings. They've all got faults. I mean, we can focus on the big guy as well, DeMarcus, and talk about his faults until the Cows come home. But he converts those into some pretty amazing stats with those faults. The problem with Rudy is that flow goes away. And I don't think it was a coincidence. Looking at the schedule, when they won 6 of 8, it was a bit of an easier schedule. You have to factor that in. They did have the road win in Utah. They did have the road win in Memphis. They did have the road win in Dallas.
I don't know if you remember, last year they got a road win in Utah as well, and that had everything to do with Rudy Gay. But you can look at those things.
And Rudy Gay is also statistically one of the most clutch fourth quarter shooters as time winds down in the NBA. When I saw that stat, I was blown away.
Last year, that stat came out.
Pretty ridiculous. I think it was,
He was the most clutch shooter in the NBA.
Does anyone think that he's not a good isolation player?
No. That's what in-game shots are.
But, I mean, he, it's the curse of the 1-4 flat and Tyreek Evans that we've seen since the Paul Westphal days.
Very few NBA coaches draw up plays when a game is on the line where it's like, we're going to have 5 options and you guys are going to decide which one is best. No, they put the ball in the hand. They run a play to get a player open, and then they put it on their shoulders and say, hey, now it's your time to win the game.
Tonight's going to be a very interesting matchup. You have Indiana, which is starting to come alive a little bit. Young Miles Turner is such a talent, and he's a big boy. He's going to give DeMarcus Cousins a couple of issues, you'd think. He's got a big enough body to be able to handle him, and maybe you don't have to double DeMarcus Cousins each and every time. Jeff Teague in the backcourt is having a great year. Monte Ellis is capable. What's the over-under on Monte Ellis tonight, 28?
Ooh, I should find that.
What
it really is.
I mean, when you think about it, Monte Ellis right now this year is averaging 8.9 points per game, which is shocking. I'm telling
He'll get 20 tonight.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I would put money that Monte Ellis is going to get 20 points tonight. I would put money on the fact, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Monte Ellis will get 20 points tonight. And then, of course, you have some guy, Paul something. At the 3. Guy with two first names. Yeah, George Paul at the 3. Now, there's a matchup.
It's a good matchup, though, with Rudy Gay. It really is. Rudy did a really good job the other night in terms of just, I don't know, he provides some, he's not like a lockdown defender, but for some guys, he provides kind of some mismatch issues in terms of his length and size at that position can make their job difficult. And when he wants to, when it's a big name player, at that position that he's matched up against, he actually can play some really good defense. So tonight's one of those nights where he has to make that decision.
Over 8 threes a game made, over 22, almost 23 taken, 36.6% from the Indiana Pacers. So I'm going to say, Nate, since you're becoming pretty much a Gamblers Anonymous member, I'm going to put the over-under at 12.5 three-pointers made and the over-under at 39%. That they shoot from 3. Where are you going with both of those?
Under the percentage, over the three-pointers made.
Over 12.5, yeah. So 13 or more. Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with you, too. For Matt George, Kevin Sharitz, Katie Christensen, Nate Goodyear, I'm Carmichael Dave. The lowdown comes noon to 3. Of course, you have Grant and Doug, and then Kings basketball tonight, and Jim Rome next. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. See you at 6.